This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Maybe the most important draft event happening here in 2021. The Senior Bowl is taking place in Mobile, Alabama this week, and we cover it all on this episode of Prospects 101, the show where we break down football prospects from all levels, talking high school prospects, college transfers, college recruiting, NFL prospects, and of course the NFL draft. As always, Prospects 101 is brought to you by our great partner of the show, Blue Wire Pods. I'm Brandon Glessner, as always joined by my co-host, Kenny Keller. And we have a special guest tonight, Trey Newman from the College Football Bros. Again, you can follow them on social media at CF Bros on Twitter and Instagram. Again, they're one of our favorite college football shows. So we are so happy to have Trey on. Also, you can access their Patreon for exclusive content. That's patreon.com/collegefootballbros.
What's up, Trey?
How you doing, boys? Thanks for having me on. It's an honor, really.
No, the honor's all mine, man. I know Gless just talked about your Patreon a little bit, and for our listeners, I'm actually a part of their Patreon. I subscribe to it, and they have a really cool Discord I can vouch for, man. It's really top-notch, a lot of cool college football fans, and just sports fans in general, so we have a good time talking sports.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into some of that, especially with our top news, because from what I heard, Trey, is that the top news of the week with Josh Heupel was a big hit on your Discord. But before yeah. that, I would like to do a little initiation here. And, you know, we were having a conversation online in another group chat, and I just think it's fun to do. But, Trey, what is your top three most – Like the worst team nicknames in the main four professional sports? And just to kick you off, and just so people are what I'm talking about, I was sitting there today and I was listening to a DC podcast. I'm a DC sports fan, and I just couldn't help but just think about how awful the name Washington Wizards is. And it's obviously my number one worst name. So we all gave our three, and I'll let Kenny chime in with his. But Trey, what are your three worst team nicknames in professional sports?
Wow, putting me on the spot here.
On the spot.
For sure, one that's always kind of triggering me just because it doesn't fit is the Utah Jazz. Obviously, I know they moved from New Orleans, but it's just – it doesn't fit. Like, that is nothing to do with Salt Lake. Like, what are you doing with that? They feel like they could have come up with their own identity there. Wow. Anything else that I can think of? Let me hear some of yours.
I'm with Gless. I had the Wizards. I thought was kind of a big number one. But you know what? Now that you bring up the Jazz, what's funny? Have you ever seen basketball where they talk where they talk about the relocation of all the teams? He's like, and then the New Orleans Jazz moved to Utah where there is no Jazz, and the Minneapolis Lakers moved to Los Angeles where they have no lakes. And it always makes me think of that when people say Utah Jazz, and I'm a Utah Jazz fan. So, but yeah, the Lakers are kind of weird. I don't know. I really think the Pelicans is kind of a loser name. I don't know. It's just weird. Like, I know it's the state bird, but like, Pelicans are gross. They're weird looking. They have that weird, they don't have a mascot. It's like that big baby, that weird, like,
it's kind of creepy.
Yeah. So that's probably one of mine. But I'd say Wizards overwhelmingly. I think I'm with Gless on this one. Is my least favorite.
Wizards was one. Two for me was the Columbus Blue Jackets. I don't even know what that means. And three, I had the Tampa Bay Rays. Now, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays was awesome, right? They had, like, their colors that were black and purple, and they had the actual ray. Now it's just, like, a ray of sunshine, and I'm like, that name sucks. It just...
It is kind of weird. Like it feels like they're not as edgy, and they have like they rebranded with a different color scheme. And though the Devil Rays was cool, you know,
they also
one?
Have such plain uniforms. Could you have more plain uniforms?
They do.
I don't know. I don't get the movement toward the plain like stuff. Like the Bengals when they switched from the Bengal logo to the B, and then It just seems like everybody's kind of going with these plain logos now. I don't know if it's like a minimalist thing, but it just. It's kind of boring, yeah. But you know who's boring to me? I know it's a historical thing. The Browns is kind of boring. Like it's just they're the Browns.
Yeah. You know who? Speaking of like jerseys and names, the Rams. I know they've rebranded a lot over the last few years, moving from L.A. to St. Louis and back to L.A. and now with the new stadium, like their uniforms to me could be so much cleaner. I am just not a fan. Like they have a good identity of old school logo and old school unis, but what they're rocking now, no bueno.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was actually a massive fan of when they had the actual gold.
Yeah.
When it was the dark when it was the navy and the gold helmet.
Oh yeah.
I used to love that. I was actually sad that they got rid of those because I thought that was a really good look. But what do I know, right? What do I know over top marketing executives? So, anyways, guys, let's get into some top news. I know that the majority of the show we're going to talk about the Senior Bowl. If you are not watching Senior Bowl practice and you are a college football fan, you are sorely missing out because the coverage on ESPNU has been fantastic. But before we get into that, I want to talk about the biggest news of the week, and that would be Tennessee really making a surprise hire. But if you think about it, it's not that much of a surprise hire when you think of who they just hired up as their athletic director. And they hired Central Florida's Josh Heupel to take the reins of that very, very rocky program.
Yeah, Trey, why don't you kick it off? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably going to be dealt here a tough hand in the sense of we don't exactly know what may be coming down the pike with some sanctions, with some of the violations they just had. And obviously, not to mention, it was already going to be an uphill battle considering – they're in the SEC, and especially in the East, they're already behind Georgia and Florida, who at this point have a decent head start. But I'm not going to ridicule the hire. Like, honestly, Heupel resonates with me a little bit more than guys like Derek Dooley, Butch Jones, Jeremy Pruitt even. So I think there is some hope. If I was a Vol fan, I could certainly talk myself into it, especially considering the fact that Tennessee, the last 4 years or something, their offense has finished in the bottom, like, third of the SEC. I know Heupel's going to get that train rolling, so at least for the Vol fans out there, he'll at least put a fun product on the offensive side of the ball. But now can he compete with the rest of the big boys? That's a tougher task.
Yeah, I didn't love or hate the hire. Like, I wasn't down on it because I know you and I talked a little bit offline. I know Trey in the Discord, I kind of mentioned this. I thought they needed a vanilla hire. Like, you weren't going to get some up-and-coming big-name coach like Billy Napier. And you weren't going to lure some big name coach away from like, say, Penn Station, like we heard, or Penn State, like we heard a lot of people saying that they had conversations with James Franklin or PJ Fleck. I didn't think that was plausible because why would those coaches tie their wagons to a team that they don't know what's coming down? Danny White brought in his right hand guy in Heupel. He knows he runs a clean program, which is going to be important coming out of what they're going to be dealing with here. And he knows he can keep his finger as pulse on the program. So I don't love it. I don't hate it. I think they could have definitely hired a better coach, but I just don't think that was an option with what the sanctions could be rolling down. But they also Heupel's not the worst hire either. I think he's a guy who can steer the program out of the toilet where they're going to be coming from. Because look, I mean, they went 3-7 this year, and this is a sanctionless team. Like, I know that people are saying they might not get hit too bad because this is all self-reported, but they're still going to get hit with something. They're not going to just walk away with it unscathed. So I think I'm okay with it. I think it's the right hire.
I don't think that Heupel is the guy that's going to take them back to being an SEC East contender. But what I do think is I think that he'll make and keep Tennessee competitive. And I think part of this hire was just like the self-reporting. I think it was basically saying not only do we self-report the sanctions, but we hired an AD, and the AD hired a guy that he knows and trusts and can keep his, you know, keep his pulse on the program. Both are outsiders, right? They don't come from the Tennessee line, so you don't have to worry about the boosters. I just get this feeling that these hires that they've done with Danny – or I'm sorry, it's Danny White, right? Is the AD?
Yeah. Yep.
With Danny White, now Josh Heupel, I think it's another signal to the NCAA of saying, hey, man, don't hit us too hard. We are really trying our best here. And I actually think it's going to benefit them in the end, right? I really do. I don't think that they're going to get hit with something, but it certainly won't be near USC because I think that they're just doing everything right at this point. Now, at the same time, is he the guy that's going to take you to be able to compete with Florida and Georgia? Only time will tell. I mean, who knows? He's an offensive guy. He's done well where he's been at. But again, once you're kind of thrown into a tough situation and, you know, I don't know. At this point, Tennessee's kind of desperate to try anything because nothing's worked since, you know, the George W. Bush administration. So, you know, at this point, they're trying something new. You know,
he's a good guy to ride out the storm with. Like, I think they could have did worse. I don't know if they could have did much better is how I'll put it. Yeah. Like, so I overall, I don't hate the hire that much. I don't love it, but I don't hate it. So I think it's pretty neutral.
All right, guys, let's get to some Senior Bowl talk right now. Let's talk about the game preview and the participants with the most approved. And before I let each one of you guys kind of chime in here, a couple things that I've noticed just about the Senior Bowl and a couple things to note. One, the Senior Bowl, in my opinion, is more important than ever with the scouting combine not taking place this year, with only one pro day happening, and with a lot of these guys that are a fair amount of guys this week that are participating that didn't play in 2020, right? They didn't play in the college football season, and they're going to have one pro day after this with no combine. So really a lot is riding on the shoulders of guys like Jamie Newman, guys like who's the receiver from Michigan? Why am I forgetting his name? Nico Collins, right? The corner out of Oregon. I mean, there's just a handful of guys that didn't play that really have to show up this week in order to kind of save their draft stock. The other thing that I'll say is I thought the coverage and what's going on ESPNU is absolutely fantastic. Same thing I said to start the show. If you don't have that on while you're working, are you even a college football fan? I mean, that would be my question, because it's so much fun to watch all these drills, the one-on-ones, the corners versus receivers, the O-line versus D-line, the running backs versus linebackers, and then, of course, all the quarterbacks that you've seen for the last 4 years now taking the field. So with that, guys, who are some of the guys that you're keeping an eye on that have the most approved on the game, not only this week, but the game on Saturday?
Yeah, a couple guys caught my eye when I looked at the initial rosters and then leading into the practices. And off the top of my head, a guy I was really excited to see is Hunter Long. He's a tight end from Boston College. I feel like the tight end class isn't necessarily that deep this year. And to me, I think he's one of the most underrated players in the entire college football. He's 6'5", 255 pounds. He had 685 yards receiving, 5 touchdowns, and he really helped open up that offense for first-time quarterback, starting quarterback Phil Yurkovich. And to me, he has the size, but I wanted to see how he looked on those one-on-one drills, how he looked going up against safeties and linebackers in the 11-on-11 drills. So that was a guy who really excited me. Another guy was Demetric Felton, and this is a guy who played running back this year for – UCLA, but he's actually at the combine as a wide receiver. He's kind of a do-it-all. Like, if you look at his 2019 numbers, he had 86 yards rushing for 331 yards, and then he had 55 catches for 594 yards. But then this season, they asked him to be more of a running back, and he had 132 carries for 668 yards. We know he had a couple big games, as we talked about on the podcast during the season. And he didn't do as much receiving because they asked for him to be more of a running back this season. But he came in and measured in at 5'8", 190 pounds during initial weigh-in for the Senior Bowl. So I'm just really excited to see what he can do transitioning to being a full-time receiver, because he's really going to be kind of an offensive weapon at the next level. And then my final guy who really got me excited to see what he could do during this week and during the game was Jamie Newman. Look, I'm a Wake Forest guy. Everybody, I think, knows that. But look, the guy's got the size and the attributes to be successful. He's a big dude. He's 6'5". 240 pounds. He can run. He's got a cannon for an arm. Like, he's got everything you would want to build a good quarterback out of to play at the next level. But we haven't seen him play in like 16 months. You know, he had some bright spots at Wake. He could throw the ball very well down the field. He threw 9 routes in deep post, like 20 yard post, phenomenally well. But he had issues in the short and intermediate passing game. So I want to see how he can handle and what he's improved on since we haven't seen him in the last 16 months. So those were kind of three guys off the top of my head that going into this week, I was excited to see practice and play. How about you, Trey?
Well, I really like Felton. Like you said, he's just so versatile. Chip Kelly used him all over the field. And like, I would see, he seems to be, this is a little out of my lane. I don't really judge translation to the NFL, but like, he just seems like such a valuable asset to any NFL team when you can use him in multiple ways. Gless, you kind of touched on a couple guys that stood out to me, mainly because of it's going to be so fascinating seeing how these opt-out players, how they transition into the draft and into the NFL. Like, how much does the rust kind of cost them, or do teams kind of scout them a little bit differently, not having, you know, one less year of film? But Nico Collins of Michigan, one of the reasons, though, not just because he opted out, but Michigan kind of underachieved in terms of having a good offense the last couple of years under Harbaugh. He's a physical threat, big guy, but he just didn't have the opportunity to really fully break out. So it'll be curious, like, for you guys, kind of a question, like, his measurables, like, he's a guy, physical specimen. Like, when you guys kind of look at this, do you think teams kind of over-evaluate maybe measurables, or maybe just focus on a Senior Bowl practice as opposed to, like, what they show on film?
Why don't you answer that one, Gless? Take that one.
Yeah, I think it's a balancing act. Me, personally, I've always said that everybody looks good in shorts, right? Yeah. Like, you can go out, right, and running on air, all of that. I think once you get to the point of I'm a potentially an NFL player, there's a lot of guys that probably look like you with those measurables. Now, there's always special people. There's always special kids, no doubt. To me, I think that one of the things that I've noticed in the just watching practice, some of these guys that do look similar body-wise, you can tell the difference once they put pads on and once they run routes and what are they doing when the ball's in the air. You know, don't get me wrong, I think measurables are something you can kind of grasp if you're between two players maybe. But I've always kind of thought a lot of that can be a little bit overrated. I like film and practice. I think that's where you see really how good a kid is, especially against competition. You start to throw them in the fire.
Sorry, go ahead, Trey.
No.
I think for me, measurables is important just because I think it helps judge a ceiling of a player, maybe. Not necessarily, like, obviously film and like what Gless said is very important.
That's fair.
But I think for me, it helps you give a good sense of a ceiling. Like, you see a guy like Nico Collins who weighed in at 6'4", 215, and then you see a guy like Tylan Wallace who's 5'11", 193. Tylan Wallace, immensely more productive in college. But then you look at Nico Collins and you're like, man, if he even just, you know, plays halfway up to what his measurables are, he could be a dominant player. He's a guy I can coach up, where Tylan Wallace, I might already have, you know, who might already hit his ceiling by the time he gets to the NFL. There's just not a lot much more you can put on there. So I think it's a balancing act, but I do think measurables are important to an extent. But like Les said, once you put the pads on, that's when you really start to separate, for sure.
Yeah, and that's kind of my opinion, because, you know, a lot of people, the average fan, will look at Nico Collins and they'll just kind of look at his stat line. They're like, yeah, he didn't do much. But I like to think of it like, okay, you've put his measurables and his talent in a different offense. There's no reason to think he couldn't have put up some big numbers. But that's part of the risk you take. So anyways, that's one guy. Gless, I hope I'm not taking all your guys. Thomas Graham, though, was another opt-out, because – he had so much hype kind of coming in this year, and then, of course, he decided to opt out, the Oregon corner. He's not the fastest guy out there, but his production the first couple years at Oregon would have him ranked near, you know, the top of the corners around the country. But I've kind of seen that – I've read that he hasn't had the greatest couple days here at practice, so I haven't been able to see too many of his clips, but just from what I've picked off. But the other thing that was being picked off is he had a couple picks against my beloved Cornhuskers, so I know he must be okay.
So Thomas Graham was actually one of the, you know, when I put down four guys here, and honestly, Trey, the reason he's intriguing is exactly what you said, that he was a guy that sat out. I personally have my own opinion about guys that sit out that aren't generational. And if you listen to the podcast, or if anybody listens to the podcast, you know how I feel about it. So I was very curious, and I thought that ESPN did a really good job of making the point, if you sat out and you haven't played football in a year and a half, right, like what's going to happen with the soft tissue, right? Are you going to be pulling hamstrings, or are ankles going to be a little bit loose, right? Are you just going to be a little bit more vulnerable, which is why I think this week is going to be interesting. And you don't get that football speed, right? You're just – it's going to take you a while to get back into that. So Thomas Graham was certainly one for me. Certainly he's a lockdown corner at Oregon when he's played. Sage Surratt is another guy that I thought was interesting. Certainly is another guy that opted out. But two guys that didn't opt out and that played last year that I'm really curious. First one is Amari Rodgers, and mainly for the reason is because the receiving class that's coming out this year may be the deepest that I can ever remember coming out of the draft, and he's a darn good receiver. And he comes from receiver U, right? I mean, I kind of looking for this guy to have a big game and then have a really good week, because he'd be a great guy in the second, third, even fourth round if he's still there, that a team could pick up and probably be a pretty productive pro. And the other one's Trey Smith, tackle from University of Tennessee. Another guy that I wanted that again, was very highly recruited, come out, big name. I want to see what he does against the big guys, right? Let's see if he can start to make his way up draft boards with a really good week. So those were some guys that really stood out to me as guys that I think have a lot, have the most to prove, but can really, really influence their draft stock this week for sure if they come out and play.
You know what was surprising with Amari Rodgers is I didn't realize until I watched weigh-ins how stout he is. Like, you know, you normally hear these guys and they're five, because he measured in at 5'9" and a half. You would think he's probably what, like 180, 185, maybe 190. That's what those guys normally at that height weigh in at. Dude, he's 211 pounds.
He's just a
big ball of muscle, man. I was really impressed with how he looked at weigh in. I was stunned at how thick and like big he was.
Yeah, and you know, you guys haven't – I like it. We've talked about a bunch of guys, and we haven't talked about quarterbacks. You know, a lot of the guys at the Senior Bowl aren't going to be the top guys at quarterback getting drafted, but it's very important this week because there's a big mix of people that are kind of in that 4 through 8 range, and that can be a huge difference in terms of, obviously, you know, salary and whatnot, because you got guys like Ian Book, Sam Ellinger – even Mac Jones is kind of up there. You got, I mean, it's and Jamie Newman, like you mentioned earlier, there's a slew of guys that if they can perform this week, that's going to make the difference between 4th, 5th versus 8th, 9th quarterback.
So let's touch on that, because Trey, I think you bring up a great point, and we'll open this up for discussion. Besides Newman, who do you guys think has the most to prove this week?
I think to an extent, Mac Jones, I don't think his stock would necessarily be depleted. Like, I don't think he would fall, because I think right now he's considered a first rounder. I don't think, like, if he had, like, an average to bad week, he was going to fall off. But I do think he has a lot to prove, because you hear a lot about, well, you know, he had guys on the offensive line like Alex Leatherwood, Christensen at center. You had Brown at guard. So you had three like All-American offensive linemen. He was handing the ball to Najee Harris. He was throwing to Waddle, the Heisman winner Devonta Smith, and John Mechie. So you had all these like detractors who were saying, well, like, you could put me at quarterback and I'd put up numbers. And that might be a fair criticism. So I think from just a standpoint of he needs a good week to shake that criticism. Because I do think he's a really, really good quarterback, and I don't think it matters who you put around him. I think it just amplifies how good he is. But I think for his detractors, he needs a good week to just to shake off a lot of that criticism, fair or unfair.
How about you, Trey?
There's one guy I kind of point to is Kellen Mond, Texas A&M. He's hard for me because he's a guy that's been with one of the best coaches teaching him in Jimbo Fisher the last few years, and that just makes me kind of wonder if he's hit his ceiling, because you know, watching his games, he's just a mixed bag. Sometimes he looks just kind of lights out, and he is athletic because he can scramble and run for a few first downs. Then there's some other games where you're just kind of shaking your head, and he leaves you with, you know, a lot to be desired. So I feel like he's going to need to make a statement if he wants to, you know, have some success coming up.
Yeah, I agree with that one. I'm going to say a comment, and then I'm going to give my guy. I mean, could Kellen Mond, when he drops back to pass, look more like a robot? I mean, I've never seen a more bionic quarterback. Like, it's almost like he's doing a robot. It doesn't look natural. It's the oddest thing. I can't put my finger on it, but it just.
No, I hear you. It looks a little
odd to watch. You know what I mean? It's a weird thing to watch. Guys, I'm gonna mention a guy that size wise has it all. Has the arm strength. I think Felipe Franks has a ton to prove this week. I think that, in my opinion, probably didn't live up to expectations at Florida. I actually thought he had a pretty good season in Arkansas this year. Physically, the kid's got it. I watched him the first three snaps of 11 on 11. It did not look good, and he just looked like he was a little bit over his head. But physically, he's got it. I think he could move in and be a quarterback that's picked in the fourth or fifth round if he can have a good week. And if not, then he may be a cat that's a seventh-round draft pick or an undrafted free agent that'll be a camp arm, and maybe he can make a practice squad somewhere. But he's a guy that I think could really, you know, make a splash and be, that fourth- and fifth-round pick if he just shows up this week.
Yeah, you know who Franks kind of, or at least his draft stock kind of reminds me of, and the reason I think he'll end up getting drafted, even if he has a poor performance this week, because guys like that with cannon arms and big size, they get drafted. And Tannenbaum talked about it today during practice. He was like, look, I would draft a guy like Felipe Franks just because I feel like my staff could coach this guy up to his potential when you look at him, because he's 6'6", 234. But like guys like – think of guys like Tanner Lee, and I know Trey's probably going to try – but he got drafted. He was drafted by the Jaguars.
Yeah.
And mainly because he had a rocket for an arm and, you know, in coachable NFL size. So I think, Gless, you're onto something there. We're talking about, you know, Franks, who's 6'6", 234 pounds. He's got a naturally strong arm. Sometimes it doesn't seem like he knows where it's going, but it only takes one scout to convince – or one scout to convince a GM or a coach to convince a GM that, hey, I can coach this guy up and really unlock his potential. But what's really interesting to me is outside of Mac Jones, you have literally five quarterbacks who are going to be the next five selected after the first six. I think everybody pretty much knows you're going to have Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Kyle Trask are going to be your first five selected. And then it's kind of anybody's game after that.
Exactly.
So like Trey, like you were saying, man, there's a lot of money and a lot of draft capital to be made of everybody this week outside of Mac Jones for sure.
The only thing that I would rebuke or just kind of fight Tannenbaum on a little bit with a comment like that, and I totally get why, right? It's the whole ceiling argument that you just talked about, and I totally get it, and that makes total sense. The only thing I would say is I can coach him up. I mean, quarterback coaches and offensive coordinators move around the league like, you know, like ibuprofen, right? I mean, it's just like, you know, like, oh, I would love to coach this guy, and then next week he's signing on to be Carolina's, you know, quarterback coach or something like that. So I wonder if that mindset is going to change a little bit. Or maybe it doesn't, because again, like I said, so for example, the example is like Felipe Franks against like Ian Book. Well, like Ian Book's like 6 foot. Ian Book's not growing anymore. Like Felipe Franks towers over Ian Book. like if you put them two together and you didn't put film on, you'd be like, well, I'm going to pick that guy over that guy. So, I mean, I get it. I get why. I just, you know, for those shorter guys, you know, I do feel a little bit bad just because I think that they are the better player, at least now. But, you know, unfortunately, it's just the way things are in the NFL. So
before we move on, you know who Felipe Franks is in my eyes? Every time I watch him play, he's Ryan Mallett.
Yeah, that's a great comparison. That's a good one. All right, guys, let's get into practice, right? And again, I've said it a couple times, the coverage's been outstanding. Tannenbaum, Todd McShay, my personal favorite, Louis Riddick, is on there, giving some great nuggets about these guys. Great practices, generally how it's structured. They start off just kind of getting used to the playbook, kind of some half speed, 11 on 11. Then they start to get into the fun stuff. They get into some drills. They get into one-on-ones. They get into 11 on 11s. Then, unfortunately, halfway through practice, they tend to put everybody asleep and do special teams. And then they get into a bunch of the other drills. So a lot of really good practice time. So who are some guys that have stood out to you in the first 3 days, just kind of looking at drills, looking at one-on-ones, and in the 11-on-11 drills as well? Kenny, we'll start with you.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcast.
So from the national team, who really has me excited, tight end out of Boise State, John Bates. I didn't really know much about this guy coming into this Senior Bowl week, and nothing he's really done in individual drills has really wowed me. But every time they go on 11-on-11, he is just eating up the defense. I mean, just he's always the safety valve for whatever quarterback's throwing him the football. He seems to earn the QB's trust right away. He's made a couple of nice plays. In some red zone 11-on-11 drills today, like little first and goal from the 10 type drives that they'd set up. He made a couple great plays. Everything he's done from an 11-on-11 standpoint has just been really good. It doesn't seem like anybody's been really able to body him up. Another guy, and Gless, I've been raving about this guy all week long, ever since day one practice, and that's Kay Johnson, wide receiver from South Dakota State.
You love some Kay Johnson.
Man, this guy has – he was super productive at the FCS level, and you're like, okay, well, you know, you've got to be a really big prospect to come out of FCS. Like, you have to be a big fish in a small pond – or you have to be a big fish in a big pond – in the FCS to really stand out. And this guy had done that. And then all he's done is just cook dudes in individual one-on-one drills. And he's even done well on 11-on-11 as well. He's made a couple highlight catches. Just everything about he's really clean out of his breaks. He's got great footwork. He's able to create separation. Now, I don't think he's going to get drafted extremely high. I think he's going to be a guy who probably goes anywhere from the fourth to the sixth round. But honestly, he was staring at undrafted free agency coming into this week, maybe a seventh round pick. He's really elevated his play to me, and he's done it against some of the best corners we've seen, which is going to translate right into my next guy, and that's Trey Brown, the cornerback out of Oklahoma.
He's by far
put on the best tape, I think, of all defensive backs this week. He shows up in one-on-one drills, which are extremely biased toward receivers. It's very tough for a defensive back to really look good in these drills, and he's done it, and he's done it while also causing turnovers. Like, I think he's picked off Sam Ellinger twice in these one-on-one drills. He's looked good at 11-on-11. He looked good in the defensive back drills today where they were doing kind of a switch at the goal line, mixing up coverages. I thought he did a really good job. And the only guy I've seen who's gotten his goat this week was Cade Johnson, which is why I thought Cade Johnson was so impressive. But Trey Brown – and Cade Johnson, to me, have probably been the two best offensive and defensive players I've seen, which doesn't bode well for the American team because both guys are on the national team. And one guy I really want to – or two guys I really want to touch on real quick on the national – or on the American side, Quincy Roche has looked absolutely unbelievable on the offensive defensive line drills. He's cooked Alex Leatherwood. He's cooked everybody he's gone up against, Dylan Raddins. Anybody who's a big name at the offensive line position right now, he's just absolutely gone and put on a clinic on the individual drills. He's looked a little off on 11-on-11. His size does kind of hurt him. So when they're in obvious running situations or not obvious passing situations, I think it might be a thing where in the NFL he might be a nickel or a situational pass rusher, but he's absolutely can play and rush the quarterback at the next level. He's got elite pass rushing ability and elite speed. And then another guy, we talked about him earlier, Amari Rodgers. He's looked great, man. He's so – I did not expect him to be as large as he is, like as big as he's – as stout as he's been. But then he just goes out there and plays like he's 5'9", 211, but he plays like he's 5'8", 160. He gets in and out of breaks very well. He's got great bursts. He's got great speed. He reminds me a lot of Deebo Samuel. That's exactly – when I saw him play, I was like, this is who he is. He's great at getting in and out of cuts. He's great at running routes, but he's also a great yards after the catch guy. Like, he's very physical and very tough to bring down. I've been impressed with what he's been able to do on one-on-ones and 11-on-11. He's looked smooth. He's looked fast. Everything's been crisp. He catches everything in sight. I've just been really impressed by him as well.
Trey, anybody stand out for you?
There's a couple guys. One, mainly maybe just because I really liked him in college, and that's Jabril Cox from LSU, linebacker. Mm-hmm. He was transferred from North Dakota State prior to that. He kind of got lost in the shuffle this year since LSU had such a horrendous year on defense, but he's a tackle machine, had a knack for forcing turnovers. You know, I look at it, they list him as 6'2", but honestly, like his wingspan to me just looks massive. I don't know, maybe it's just him in a uniform or something, but I was reading and I saw a couple of clips. He put some offensive linemen on their back. So it's not just his athleticism. It's his strength too. So that could work to his benefit there. There's a guy that's just been getting, honestly, at this point, it seems like too much buzz, and that's Dwayne Eskridge, Western Michigan wide receiver. Like, going into this, I really liked him. I thought he'd be kind of an under-the-radar guy because I like to watch a lot of MAC football during, you know, midweek during the year, and, like, every year there's a guy in the MAC that just kind of – they just stand out. Like, they're a men amongst boys as in terms of athleticism. He's that guy. He looked good in his uniform, whatever. He had that swagger. But now he's just, like – everyone's just raving about him, which kind of – I'm kind of a devil's advocate. Now it's kind of scaring me away from him. So he's been really solid. And then the last guy I'll kind of touch on is Kadarius Toney, the Florida wide receiver. The reason I kind of bring him up, though, is because he's only 5'11", but he's super fast. He was one of Kyle Trask's favorite targets this year. You know, he'd be probably kind of good in the slot, kind of like Percy Harvin, an old Florida receiver. Mm-hmm. But you see that in NFL nowadays, that new wave of – it's not just those tall, big wide receivers like the Randy Mosses or whatever. It's getting these fast players. Like, you look at the Kansas City Chiefs. It's like Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman. It's just get these guys in space and then just run. And he could be a guy kind of that fits that mold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that comparison, and we've talked about it on the show before. The days of the 6'4", 6'5", receiver in the NFL – are certainly not gone, but they're certainly dwindling, right? And to your point, if you look at all the receivers that have been taken in the last few years, you look at the Tyreek Hills of the world, you look at these guys that are just flat-out burners, guys that can get separation. They don't have to be 6'4 and 6'5 anymore. So, you know, I would agree with you. I actually love Toney, and I know my Washington football team fandom sitting there at 19, if there's not a quarterback you like, if he gets to me at 19, you know, outside of that initial crop of receivers, man, if you can get a guy with that kind of speed to complement Terry McLaurin, man, I might be all in on that, assuming you've got the quarterback position all taken care of, which for us is a huge question mark, as most NFL fans know. Also, could Todd McShay talk more about Dwayne Eskridge?
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
We get it, Todd. We get it.
He's had a weird week, man. Because I I'm not a huge Todd McShay fan, but he's normally pretty solid. Like, I don't really have a lot of criticism about how he covers players. He usually does a pretty decent job, but I feel like he's just harped on the same guys all 3 days. Like, every time I hear him talk, he's either talking about Eskridge, Nico Collins, or he's talking about Carter, the running back from North Carolina, and talking about how he's raised in like a military family and how he's disciplined. That's like, I swear, it's like burned into my brain if that's all he's talked about this week. It's just been kind of weird. But yeah, I mean, Eskridge has definitely put on a show. I don't know if I'm in as love with him as McShay is, but he's definitely helped his stock for sure.
Couple guys that really stood out to me, Kenny, you covered him, so I won't gush over him too much. Trey Brown, the corner from Oklahoma, has looked absolutely unbelievable. Certainly a guy that I think in a weaker corner draft is probably playing himself into a day two pick at this point. So, you know, if he has a really good game on Saturday, I could see him catching the eyes of a lot of teams on day two. Tylan Wallace, I think, has had a pretty good week. Not a great week, but a pretty good week. And again, he's kind of in that second, third wide receiver crop. Again, very productive at Oklahoma State. I thought he's had a decent week. Teron Jackson, edge rusher from Coastal, just like Quincy Roche, to me, he's just shown speed. And a lot of the edge rushers, I haven't seen a lot of pure, like, turn-the-corner speed. Love Teron Jackson. Only thing about him, he's a little bit undersized, but – If anybody's ever listened to this podcast knows, we do love ourselves some Coastal Carolina. So
Trey included.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. And then last guy, Creed Humphrey, on the inside, another Oklahoma guy, has looked really, really good as well. We've actually been in a couple text message chats with a couple buddies of ours who have also noticed Creed Humphrey and are salivating over him and maybe getting drafted to their team. So I think that those are some four guys that really stood out to me. Now, I know we talked about guys that had, you know, needed to have big weeks. We talked about guys that are having great weeks. Now let's talk about guys that really need to rebound on Saturday that have really kind of struggled in some of these one-on-one drills or haven't really looked great in 11-on-11. So Kenny, who are some guys that you kind of have written down that really need to rebound on Saturday?
Yeah, for me, starting with the national team, a guy that disappointingly has looked really bad, and obviously, again, you know, everybody knows I'm a huge Deeks fan, go Wake Forest, but Sage Surratt, he looks slow, he's looked sloppy, he's dropped a lot of balls, he hasn't created a lot of separation in 1-on-1 or 11-on-11 drills. He just doesn't look like – I mean, he looks like a guy who hasn't played football in a year. But even worse than that, like, okay, yeah, I could excuse that maybe on Tuesday. You know, you're rusty. You haven't had a lot. But Wednesday, he hasn't looked good. Today, like, he just doesn't look like – and speed was already a question mark for him anyway because he's never really been able to show. But I'm concerned on his pro day, the way he's playing right now, it looks like he's running in quicksand. Like, I would be surprised if he runs a 4.6 or higher, which would be absolutely devastating. So he really needs to be able to put on some good game tape on Saturday because his film during practice has not looked great so far. Sorry to pick on your guy, Gless, but Keith Taylor, defensive back out of Washington. I feel like every time I've watched him in drills this week, he's just getting absolutely torched.
I know. To be fair, as a UW fan, he's not even our good corner. I don't even know why he's there, but that's okay.
But he just – yeah, he and then he's gotten chippy. Like, after he's gotten beat, he's had some kind of questionable, like, shoves or to the point where, like, Miami Dolphins coaches have gotten on him about his aggressiveness after the play is already over on these drills. I think he's just frustrated, man. He's just gotten beat a lot. So he's going to need a big game day. Sam Ellinger. Man, he's thrown a couple picks on 1-on-1s. He's missed a lot of open throws in 11-on-11s. He just hasn't been very consistent. I think the mobility's there. Obviously, he's a very dynamic athlete at the position, but I was really expecting him to play a lot better. And honestly, I think Ian Books has moved past him on my rankings. Before this, I would have had Ian Book behind Sam Ellinger, but honestly, I think Sam Ellinger really needs to show up on Saturday to jump Ian Book back, at least in my rankings again. And then on the American team, just real quick, a couple guys I think really need to put on some good film on Saturday. Alex Leatherwood, you know, we keep hearing a lot of there's a big range of where we see that he could go. Like I've seen him mocked as high as mid first round. I've seen scouts that have him ranked highly, and I've seen mock drafts who have had him going in the second round and scouts who have said he's a second round prospect. At times at drills, he's been absolutely locked down. Like today, he had a really good day. He locked down Quincy Roche twice, but then yesterday he got cooked by him three or four times. Boogie Basham cooked Leatherwood a couple times yesterday. So he's just had a very up and down performance. I think a good statement game on Saturday will do a lot to probably lock him in to a high second round pick, a high day two pick, possibly a low first round. I don't quite think he's going to – I think at this point he's probably a fringe first rounder. And then another guy who's really step up is Wyatt Hubert, defensive end out of Kansas State. There's times where he looks absolutely relentless and utilizes a bull rush very, very well. I liked what I saw when he was rushing the passer in these one-on-one drills from the interior, even though he's more of a five or seven tech, but he's got raw strength. Like the guy uses his leverage well, but the only problem is when he's not utilizing his leverage, when his technique gets sloppy, he just gets absolutely crushed by these bigger offensive linemen. So I really want to see what he can do, if he can consistently get after the passer, if he can hold and shed his blocks during the game, because he hasn't quite been able to show that he could do that consistently in these drills. So he's a guy I'm really going to keep an eye on Saturday and who really needs some good game film.
Yeah, so I'm more of a glass half full, guys. I don't like looking at the negative and what they haven't done. But there was a couple – so, you know, we talked about Amari Rodgers, but another Clemson receiver, Cornell Powell, he really came from the average college football fan, kind of came out of nowhere towards the end of the year. He kind of blew up late, and he wasn't really a primary target of Trevor Lawrence, you know, in his career. But I've seen a couple plays where he just wasn't – I don't know, maybe he was like trying too hard or something. He'd beat the defender off the block, wouldn't come down with the catch. Cornell Powell's a guy that he's starting to get some buzz because he showed up late, but I'll be curious to see how he kind of pans out. Another guy that I kind of looked at was Jacoby Stevens, the LSU safety. He really, for me, when I look at LSU, he thrived a couple years ago when they won the title, but that this past year didn't do a whole lot, and that kind of gives me a little bit of concern because – you know, he can thrive when he has a ton of talent around him, but on his own, it maybe wasn't as great. So he's a guy I was kind of looking at. And then a guy that I really haven't seen a whole lot. I saw a couple plays of him, and it's your boy, Kenny, Carlos Basham. I saw he's very versatile. The thing I like about him is because he seems like he can do inside and outside. How's he performing? I didn't really see much about him.
So he's kind of been up and down. I think the first day was kind of rough for him. Tuesday, he did not put in a good practice. Wednesday and Thursday, he's definitely done a lot to kind of put that in the rearview mirror. I think he's – for him, the problem with him is he doesn't necessarily flash. He's not an elite pass rusher. Like, he doesn't have amazing speed. His burst is, you know, above – everything he does is kind of above average. Nothing's really great. But the good thing is everything he does is above average, so it kind of comes out like in the plus. But the only problem is he just doesn't look good. I guess he's the guy who doesn't look good in shorts. Like for him, he's a game film type of guy. So you're right. I mean, he's definitely someone who needs good game film on Saturday. He's a guy who I think thrives in getting in the flow of the game versus starting and stopping and doing these one-on-one drills. It just doesn't seem to really jive with his skill set.
Couple guys on my list, and I'm going to save the best for last, that I think really needs to have a big game on Saturday. First guy, Jordan Smith. In drills, he just looks a tad bit slow. Looks like he's just getting kind of manhandled on the one-on-one. So I think in order to help his draft stock, I think a good game Saturday would really go a long way for him. I think Felipe Franks, I've already mentioned him, right? A guy that going out there with an NFL offense – and does he have the footwork? Does he have the mental processing? Can he show enough to show teams that he's worth getting drafted and not go undrafted? Now, my next two, no surprise, anybody who knows me, these guys were guys that opted out, but that I don't think should have opted out. I think that they needed to be there and get some more film. on and what they can do. First guy we've covered is Nico Collins, right? Physically, he's got it. All right, well, let's see what you can do against really good competition, and let's see what you can do against some of the best quarterbacks in the country throwing you the ball, right? And let's get some of that on film. And are you in football shape? Can you do the things that an NFL wide receiver is going to be required to do, especially coming off the bench cold, I guess you could say. So I would like to see a big rebound from him. I know he's looked good in drills, but when you opt out, there is a target on your back that you have to come out. This is the whole reason you sat out, right? You sat out because you didn't want to play in a season that was quote-unquote, you know, half-baked or whatever you want to call it. So it's going to be a big moment for him. And can he rebound enough to really make himself get into that second or third tier? Guys, another guy that I think really needs to have a big week, and we talked about him a lot on Prospects 101 leading into the college football season, and that's Kylan Hill, running back out of Mississippi State.
Oh my God.
This was a guy that we thought could be a borderline second-round pick, day two pick coming out with a really good season at Mississippi State. Now, I get it. Mike Leach came in, running the air raid. Running backs aren't that much of a feature. I get it. Kylan Hill did not help himself by opting out three games in. Understand it was a bad season. Three games, only had 58 yards rushing. Just not a good look overall. So this is he's really going to have to get some great film on himself this week. And he's really going to have to turn some heads when he's got the ball in his hands, in my opinion, to be a draftable running back on day two or day three. Because there's enough running backs out there. You're going to be able to find these guys. But I think a great game on Saturday can go a long way for Kylan Hill and his draft stock when it comes April.
I 100% agree on that last one, too, because another thing with him is one of his bugaboos was he got injured a decent amount at Mississippi State. So if he can kind of put some good film on tape to give the scouts a last good taste, that can only help him.
Well, the good news is all these guys are going to have great weather. You know, it's not going to be a weather game, which is good. You know, it's 66 degrees. It's going to be partly sunny as I look here on my app from Mobile, Alabama. So that's good. At least we're going to be able to have good weather and see what these guys can really do on the field. The bummer, though, breaking news, is Matt Jones is now questionable for playing, which to me is code for he's probably not going to play if he's questionable 2 days before the game. Gless, I know you and I were texting about this, but Trey, I don't know if you saw it or not. Right toward the end of practice today, they were doing drills, and somebody decided to go, you know, balls to the wall, and they fell down and rolled up on the back of Mac Jones's leg. And, like, what's the one rule you hear these coaches yelling about? Stay off the ground.
Stay off the quarterback, yeah.
And they rolled up the back of his leg, and he rolled his ankle. Now, it doesn't seem like it's serious. It sounds like it's probably just a roll, maybe a sprain, but I think Mac Jones at this point has done enough this week to show that I think he can play at the next level. And he's been by far the best quarterback here this week. I doubt he's going to play, which is kind of a bummer because I really wanted to see him live. But if he's not healthy, it's not fair to the other guys for him to go out there healthy. And it's really not fair to him either.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer. It kind of dampens my enthusiasm a little. But I'm really excited about this game, guys. I think this is probably one of the deepest Senior Bowls I can remember in a long, long time. And it's going to be one of the ones it's going to be extremely important. I mean, there's no substitute for game film, and with no combine and no one-on-one drills at pro days. Pro days are going to be strictly measurable events, 40s, you know, three cone drill, vertical jump, stuff like that. There's going to be no one-on-one type stuff at these pro days. So this is a big deal for these guys, and I'm glad they were able to do it. And I'm really looking forward to the game.
Yeah, I agree with you, Kenny. I think it's going to be a fantastic game. I have had a lot of fun watching a lot of these guys that we talk about, you know, leading up to the season, during the season, and really what they're capable of doing. And I couldn't agree with you more, right? I mean, has there been a Senior Bowl with more on the line for a prospect, right? And being able to improve your draft stock. I can't remember a time where there is. And be able to get good film on tape, especially those guys that had opted out. I mean, and as we've seen with Sage Surratt, did he come prepared? And yeah. And is there a substitute? And it, I'm sorry, let me go back. Is this a lesson for future guys in sitting out in that there's no substitute for football speed, right? For football practice, right? You can do all the training you want. You can do all the things to get you ready. Is there a substitute for putting on the pads and playing the game? And I think that is yet to be seen, but it will be interesting if we get that feedback after all this is said and done, after April happens. It'll be interesting to kind of take a step back and have that discussion because there was a lot of guys that did that. And yeah. What is the impact on that? And there's going to be a lot of guys that aren't here this week that there's going to be general managers that are going to take chances on those guys that will go in the first round. You know, they were underclassmen, and they'll get picked, but they didn't play. So What kind of player are they getting? And I think that's going to be the biggest talk after this week is those guys that opted out, was it the right decision or not? And I think that's going to kind of lead up all the way to April.
Trey, any final thoughts on your end? And also, as you wrap up, remind our audience again where they can find you guys at, the College Football Bros, and just kind of give us a little bit if you guys are putting anything together.
Yeah, so in terms of a final thought, another element that's kind of cool that we haven't really touched on is just seeing some of the animation of the coaches. Like this year, seeing Matt Rhule, like he has been I saw a drill where I think it was with Wyatt Huber earlier in the week where he just got so animated, so pumped. And then there was a clip today where I don't even know if it was live. I don't know if they sunk it up, but Josh Palmer, the Tennessee receiver, juked someone out of their shoes, just like put him in a spin cycle. They showed like they went to another video and showed Matt Rhule like just kind of almost like his jaw drop. And I don't know if that was like kind of a fake, but either way, seeing his animation's been kind of a nice little added element to this week. Just to kind of wrap up my stint here, part of the College Football Bros. Again, you guys introduced it nicely at the beginning. You can follow us at CF Bros on social media. We have a great time interacting with a lot of fans. One of the great things about college football and sports in general is being able to kind of interact with people. And so now getting to speak with Gless a little bit, but Kenny more often in our Discord. It's just great to hear other people's opinions. That's what's great about college football is it's a lot of everyone has their own take, their own view, their own sense of, you know, from where they come from. So it's been really a blast, more than just the podcast, just getting to know some of the fans out there. Yeah. So we really have a fun time doing it. It's been a pleasure being on this one with you guys as well.
Yeah, and I also forgot you guys just started doing a lot of YouTube stuff as well, and it's been really top notch. Like I'm really enjoying the YouTube portion of what you guys are doing.
Appreciate it. Yeah, Michael, the youngest brother, kind of heads it, and he's done a very good job for us getting some of those videos out. So, yeah, if you ever on YouTube, you can look for College Football Bros. We appreciate any of the subscribers out there.
Yeah. As our former co-host, Riley Bradshaw, you say, make sure you ding the bell and subscribe to the YouTube channel.
Amen.
To stay with all the YouTube content. Trey, you know, echo what Kenny said. Thanks for being on, man. Always love doing – partner shows with you guys. We do love your show. Can't echo that enough. And make sure you, as a Prospects 101 listener, add Prospects 101 to your off-season college football and prospects routine by following us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Prospects 101 Pod. We are posting throughout the week, talking a lot about the NFL draft, as you can imagine. Also, make sure you subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform to stay up to date with all of our episodes. Also, a 5-star review is greatly appreciated. We appreciate you spreading the word. Thanks for listening to this episode. Talk about the Senior Bowl for Kenny, for Trey. I'm Gless. Enjoy the Senior Bowl. We'll be back to talk some more NFL draft next week.